Now on Mitchell's Front Page, Talking Freely with Stephanie Asher.
And good morning to you, Steph. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Mitchell. And yourself?
Very good indeed. Good to see you once again. Getting straight into it. Darren Lyons on the front cover of the paper. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? What a, as he described it, an epic fail, really, isn't it? And look, I don't see Darren trying to defend himself. I think he addressed it really well. He was straight up and apologised and, yeah, described it as an epic fail, which it is, in a sense. But the attacks are coming through thick and fast, aren't they? And no doubt they will continue.
Yeah, I think with some people, you just have to give them an inch and they'll go a kilometre.
Yeah, I think so. I think sometimes there's been people waiting for this sort of thing. And I think we all know that the attacks are politically motivated. That's why we're seeing it play out in public. There's a couple of things too. I mean, I was getting a bit into it on Facebook last night, and Kylie Fisher posted a couple of things which I thought were very well expressed when she said, you know, in the last 3 weeks we've seen men in very public positions of influence disrespecting women with the Billy Brownless incident, and then David Reynolds in regard to women V8 supercar drivers, and now our mayor with the naked woman on the T-shirt. And her point was that the culture of women being unequal is alive and well in Australia across sport and government, and it's so entrenched that there are people defending the actions of these men, and it's quite unbelievable. And I think that's really true, and I think it's also, it's not just men with attitudes of inequality, it's so entrenched here that it is that real casual sexism that people don't necessarily know that they're doing it. And I made the point, I think it's so poorly understood, just like bullying is and racism is poorly understood, that people who consistently behave that way don't actually realise they're doing it. So I don't disbelieve Darren's point that he didn't know what was on the T-shirt, call it naive, whatever. I've worn T-shirts when I haven't really understood the significance of it. You just kind of, you know, don't really think too hard about it when you're not looking at it yourself. I wouldn't begin to try and argue that point, but the idea that I think a casual sexism is all about people not understanding that it's there. And I think there's an awful lot of men and women in Australia. I was incredibly sexist until about 3 or 4 years ago. I'd laugh at all the jokes and think it was hilarious. I didn't really get it. I didn't understand what it was. And it's only once you've seen what it is that you realise that it is really, really dangerous and really culturally inappropriate. And I think that's where the discussion and the links with the 69 dead women are actually not irrelevant. I've said this on the show before, that the reason for violence against women, the evidence shows that it is this rigid stereotyping and the unequal relationships between men and women and a broader culture of violence that do create it. So in that context, I understand why the discussion is there. I think it's unfortunate that it's become very personal and that there, you know, there are political motivations behind it. But I think it's a really good opportunity, and someone else pointed out this on Facebook, really good opportunity to see how much energy could be actually going into raising awareness of these sorts of things instead of just sticking the boots into one individual. So I think there's a relevant conversation to be had, but I think, you know, he's up on Darren, he's apologised, leave him alone.
Well, on that link to the 69 dead women, I didn't necessarily say that I didn't think it was relevant, because clearly it is, but I just wonder if it was particularly helpful to this discussion to link the two issues together, but you may say it was helpful.
Well, I think if it's going to be a conversation that's going to be had, and it is, because it's a very public figure and it's been raised to a national level, so let's turn it into a positive. I'm always someone who will try and find the positive spin on something, so I think if we're going to make Geelong look good, I find it really incredible that people just seem to want to attack their own city and bring Geelong into disrepute. So I think that's questionable, but I think we can now take a really intelligent position and say, let's talk about this and in the context of rigid stereotyping and why that image is no longer relevant. I mean, it was, it's not the nakedness, it's the sign, obviously, that's the issue. So it's those sorts of T-shirts. And I mean, Cotton On have been had up with this. They've made some bad decisions, and it's everywhere, you know. People don't realise until it's pointed out, and I think we can take a more intelligent view of it all.
So you agree pretty much with what everyone on this station so far this morning has said, that yes, it's inappropriate, and Darren Lyons has considered that himself, but essentially it's not a sackable offence, or it's not something he should resign over.
No, definitely not. I think it's a mistake, and he's admitted it, and he admitted it straight up very quickly and very well, I thought.
And again, to quote Jan Farrell, she says, as a woman who lives in Geelong, I am beyond offended at his ongoing disrespect for women. Is that a problem, his ongoing disrespect for women? Do you think he's sexist?
I'd say Jan would feel that way, yes. I don't know. I haven't experienced that with Darren, so I couldn't comment.
So you don't necessarily think that he has an ongoing disrespect? Because I think that is quite a bold accusation.
It is, and I don't delve into personal attacks myself, so, you know.
And as we've said, the main people that have come out to attack him have been obviously the two councillors, and I don't think they would mind me saying that they're ideologically on different position to Darren Lyons, but then also Trades Hall and Sarah Hathaway, former candidate for the Socialist Alliance for Geelong. So, you know, there are people that have run through a common thread. Do you think that it would be different if someone that was on sort of the same side, so to speak, as Darren, if they came out and said that he has to stand down?
Possibly, but again, I don't. I do think it is incredibly politically motivated. I was reading the paper yesterday about the branch stacking with Bill Shorten. I thought, the tension's gone off that nicely, hasn't it?
Well, it has, hasn't it? Tell us about that branch, because that is quite serious, where essentially it said that Labor memberships are paid for by Visa cards, which were gift certificates, and they were anonymous, so we don't really know who was signing up all of these members.
Yeah, that's right, to the tune of around $36,000 or something, I think. Now, I don't begin to understand the machinations of parties and branches and how it all, pre-selection, how it all works, but it was enough of a story to warrant further reading and investigation, I think, and yeah, it's that untraceability of memberships.
Well, that's right. So, you know, is that a really big issue for the wider political debate, or is it just an issue that the Labor Party needs to resolve internally?
I think so, and I think they've actually set a precedent for doing exactly that, which is why it was quite an interesting story. There has been somebody who's been pinged for it recently, and so now how they handle this one. And this goes back to 2013, so just an interesting one to keep an eye on.
And also, it does put a few questions on Bill Shorten and his leadership.
Yeah. I think with any leader, as we know, as soon as you're up there on the pedestal, they'll find things to try and tear you down about. So I'm sure he'll handle it.
Now, Bendigo, what did you make of that?
It was interesting. I've read a lovely post, again, I've been on Facebook last night, from a friend of mine, a filmmaker, documentary maker, and she said she was seeing the disturbing images of the racist pro-Australia groups protesting against the Muslim community. And at first she was angry, and she said, now I just feel sorry for them. They're ignorant, frightened, and sad individuals. It would be awful to be carrying around so much fear and hatred inside you. And I thought that's probably sums it up for me too. You know, when people are that fanatical about something, you just have to have sympathy, don't you?
Yeah, well, that's right. We're just watching it, and I suppose that's just what happens. People get out there and protest, but hopefully as a society we are able to look at that and say, well, no, actually we don't agree with that, and that's part of the debate.
Yeah, that's right, and I was station hopping a bit on the way in this morning and listening to some people ringing into ABC, and again, it's that complete lack of consciousness of their own bias that is quite breathtaking. You know, people ringing in and just absolutely making comments about Muslims and stereotyping every Muslim and saying we're at war with these people. Like, oh, we're not actually at war with Muslims. It's really an unbalanced discussion, but people don't realise that they are exhibiting bigotry and racism.
Well, I was listening to a caller to a talkback station in Sydney on a podcast from during the week, and they said, oh, you know, we're living in a certain suburb, we've got four mosques around us, and we're afraid to go out of our own home. And I can't believe that mosques on their own are associated with a symbol of we must be at war. You know, mosques are a place of worship.
Very, very much so. This person was saying that, you know, we've never had this sort of thing with Jehovah's Witnesses and Catholics and et cetera, et cetera. Excuse me, I think we have. I think that Catholicism's got a fair history. Christianity's got a fairly bloody history as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is interesting, isn't it?
Now, yesterday I heard there was going to be a story today about Avalon Airport, and I was sort of hopeful that it would be something to do with it going international, but instead we see that there is going to be some development on that site, which is good news, but I think the end goal is to try and get it international. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think everybody's hopes are up, aren't they, really? I mean, we're all so batting for Avalon. But I think the acceptance of the master plan is a pretty big deal. This has been something I actually had. It was on one of my jobs a while ago, having a look at this, so years ago now. But the fact that it does now provide the mechanism to grow the precinct and introduce retail, I think that's the exciting part. So it's happening, and nothing happens quickly, apparently. But the big game, absolutely, is getting international facilities developed.
And where do you think we're at? Because apparently there's been an MOU with a Chinese airline, but obviously we don't actually have the processing facilities there for an international terminal.
Yeah, well, I think all of this paves the way, doesn't it? I was reading the JETCO story as well the other day where
they've
got, you know, some more people coming in there. So I think it's absolutely incremental changes, and I think Justin Giddings works really hard and everybody out there. So it's pretty tough. Melbourne Airport is a very, very tough competitor.
Yeah, well, that's right. With all the Qantas clubs they have. Now, the JETCO story I thought was quite interesting. I don't know if Melbourne to Dubbo... Well, I actually didn't know that Melbourne to Dubbo was a very, very big route. I'm actually going there on the weekend, but I'll be driving.
Interesting, wasn't it? It sounded almost ridiculous, but then straight away I thought, I've worked with a local business here who has a an office and an affiliation with a Dubbo business. So it's obviously quite the well-kept secret, Dubbo.
And they did actually have in that story all the different tourist attractions you could go and see. Of course, the zoo, the biggest one, but there's some interesting things in Dubbo, so maybe a day trip with that service.
Yeah, that's right. And it is probably those sort of smaller flight routes, and again, this is the ferry argument too. It's the expectation is that it has to be from major capital to major capital. It's like we've covered that. We do actually take trips in different directions, one to small, from one regional place to another. So
catamaran to Burnie.
That's right. The vomit comet.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the CBD plan, you're at the same breakfast as I, and apparently everyone that's just about come on the program today was at on Friday morning. All of Geelong was there pretty much. What did you think about the discussions of where we're going to try and revitalise the CBD?
I thought it was terrific, and it's a good timing to get that update. I will be slightly critical and say I think the document needs updating, but I said that as soon as it came out. I don't think it's very much an internal planning type document in its style. I would make sure that that's a lot clearer, cleaner and sharper. Maybe I'll go and have a chat to them about how I could do that for them.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think, you know, one of the big points for me was we're one year into a 15-year plan, and I think we've seen some really good improvements already. There's a lot of conversation about it. There's a lot of really good things happening. It's funny, when we went to London earlier in the year, I really noticed the flowers and the hanging baskets everywhere, and I thought, oh, this is where Darren's got all these ideas from, and it makes a huge difference, because I think, gee, it's not that difficult to keep those pansies alive, but they look fantastic and they're really quite hardy. So I think those sorts of things, the lighting, you know, flowers, art, all those things, the connectivity with a lot of the laneways opening up and good cafes and things, I think it's really starting to take off.
I think, again, that transport is an issue, and I'm reticent to say it all over again, the parking issue. Actually, I won't even bring it up. But,
we'll just argue about that.
That's right, we will. But the whole boulevard concept from... sort of the waterfront up to the top of the hill down Moorabool Street looked fantastic, but that is sort of a major thoroughfare for traffic in Geelong. So where is all that traffic going to go?
Well, it's funny because I use different streets all the time in Geelong. I don't have a habitual route. I think there's lots of different options because it is on a grid. You know, if you don't use Moorabool, I use Gerringham half the time if I'm going down to the waterfront, or I'll, you know, pop down Yarra Street, or yeah, there's lots of different options.
But presumably if we sort of lock that down or make it narrow, then those other streets are going to be much busier.
Yeah, but we don't really have a traffic problem in Geelong, do we? Come on.
Well, not in comparison to Melbourne, but there are times of the day. There are times, yeah, well, Sydney. But there are times of the day where you think, you know, I'm stuck in traffic. And as Hillary said, there is a bit of an issue with people doing the rat run to avoid Latrobe Terrace.
Yeah, true. And I think probably the traffic light syncing is the issue that I find. How is it you can get stopped at every single red light? Yeah. It's always when you're running late as well.
That's right. That's what I was thinking the other day. Just the number of traffic lights on that road is probably the biggest issue, because it's definitely wide enough.
Yeah.
Now, before we go, Malcolm Turnbull, nearly a month on, and apparently there's been a news poll out today that's quite complimentary to him. What do you think about how he's travelling?
Yeah, I think he's definitely polling well on a personal level. I think everyone's really relieved, aren't they? The suspense of waiting what Tony Abbott was going to do next was creating a huge sense of uncertainty in not a very positive way. I think there's a few really good things that Malcolm Turnbull's doing, which is really taking that leadership position and keeping the discussion dignified and intelligent, and I think we all really want to see more of that. But then again, he was jeered by the party factions, apparently, while Tony Abbott was cheered. I was reading that article yesterday.
Well, that's just laughable to say, oh, we don't have backroom deals, when that's how he got into power in the first place.
Yeah, true.
I don't think anyone believes that. So, you know, I don't know why he would say that.
No, I suppose for me it's the feeling is that people are just really sick of the bitching and the bloody-minded contrariness of things, you know, from one party to another, just tearing something down for the sake of it. We just want them to get on with governing, you know, even if they can't lead half the time, you think we'll just get on with governing. And I think that applies to penalty rates, the China Free Trade Agreement, everything. It's like there seems to be just this contrary response to everything. And it's like, we've got solutions. People have done the work.
Well, I don't know if you heard the interview that he did on a certain Melbourne radio station that we can't name, 3AW, but he talked about penalty rates, but he was ducking and weaving and avoiding answering the question.
Yeah, no, I didn't hear that interview. They'd gone a little bit quiet on my radar, but I, you know, I don't think that we're far off. The Productivity Commission's done the work. It's a matter of communicating the solution. I think they're 99% there. And, okay, some will disagree, and clearly clearly some will disagree.
Some, yeah.
But I think, you know, the Chamber of Commerce down here is pushing this pretty hard too. It's for small business. We need to do something because the Sunday rates in particular are just crippling.
Just interestingly, that news poll is 50-50. So that's actually 1 point down for the Liberals. But in terms of preferred PM, 57% to 19%.
Yeah, that's right. The personal part of it is much higher, isn't it?
Well, very good to speak to you today, Steph. We've got Joe Miles on the line, who is the candidate for Polworth for the Greens.
Oh, so we're going over to him. Best.
Yes, but good to see you. And I'm going to be away for a couple of weeks, but you're still going to come in and speak to David. And I look forward to speaking to you on the first Monday in November.
Thank you. Look forward to it and have a great holiday.
Thank you very much, Stephanie Asher there.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.